Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
There's so much I want to do today with you on this show. I just hope I get to it all without rushing. Let me give you a little heads up. Later in the show, of course, it's been a major move to try to raise worker wages to $15 an hour who are working in the fast food industry. I'm going to do my best to lay out all the pros for doing that and all the cons, and hopefully take a couple of calls from you to get your reactions. I'm going to give you the How Employable Are You quiz. It might help you to get a sense of your real marketability. Of course, I want you to call in later for 3-minute workovers, try to help you with whatever your work problem is. But I want to start by talking about where the jobs are in my judgment. I've been collecting a lot of stuff over the last few months of where I think the pockets of opportunity are. I know that many of the listeners to this show are not techies, and so I want to focus mainly on that, but it would be remiss for me not to start there because, of course, we are living in an ever more technological society. Indeed, I believe that the major hirers over the next 1 to maybe 5 or 10 years are going to be the 500-pound gorillas of the technology world, the Amazons, the Googles, or their business analogs, IBM and Oracle, and their biomedical analogs, Amgen and Genentech and companies like that, as well as some of the smaller startups. Of course, there are going to be jobs. Big data, we've heard it again and again, that big data is going to be where so much of the action is. So marketing analysts who can analyze big data, computer system analysts, network administrators, software engineers to develop new software. But kind of sexier, before I leave the world of technology jobs, I saw this in this coming month, December's Popular Science, a very intriguing feature called the Best of What's New, called the Internet of You. And it's really about sensors. Sensors may be the most under-discussed and most potent of the new technologies. So if you or someone you love is contemplating a career like, you know, remember back in the 60s, they say, you know, from the movie The Graduate, it's the next big thing is plastics. Well, maybe the next big thing that is under-discussed is sensors. And I'm going to read you a section of this thing from Popular Science. Sensors are the key ingredient in web-enabled devices that speak to one another. In the home, that could mean a phone that talks to a garage door opener, or a thermostat that talks to motion detectors. While these smart devices may represent someone's preferences, like, I want my lights to glow blue, they don't necessarily represent needs, like I'm tired, or I'm hungry, or I'm drunk. For a heater to know we're cold, or a vending machine to know that we need an apple, those devices need to talk directly to us. And for that to happen, we'll need a wearable network of gadgets, what they call an Internet of You. Much of the groundwork is in place already. Inexpensive health and fitness monitors are gaining in popularity. More than 100 million sensors were sold in 2012, and the number is going to rise to over 500 million within 5 years. Nike alone boasts 18 million users on its Nike Plus network, which includes the Fuel Band tracker and a sneaker line. And there are dozens of other kind of monitors out there, including bottles that record our water intake and forks that warn us when we're eating too fast. I could use that. Wearable screens are proliferating too. For example, the Pebble smartwatch, which displays email and text notifications, raised more than $10 million from backers on Kickstarter. Samsung recently debuted the Galaxy Gear, which is a watch that runs on Android and syncs easily with sensors. Then there's, of course, Google Glass, which puts information just above eye level. Then there are protein sensors in our blood that will sense that when maybe we're about to have a heart attack. That was something that Andrew McAfee, who's going to be a guest on the show, MIT's kind of futurist and business guru, is going to talk about. This combination of personal monitors and connected screens are going to form the backbone of a new system. And the next step will be to take the user out of the loop and connect our personal data to the world around us. In September, Nissan introduced the Nismo smartwatch, which provides a glimpse of the possibilities. The device uses biometric data, such as heart rate, to tell users whether they're too tired or too wired to drive. One day, a car's internal computer could tap into that same data. Given a driver's anxiousness, sleepiness, or drunkenness, the car could modify its performance or disable itself entirely. Rather than asking you to make database decisions, your own personal internet will make them for you. All you'll have to do is show up. Of course, it's scary. It feels a little big brothery. But in the end, human beings, maybe ourselves, are going to control when to turn this on or turn off. But dear listeners, for those of you who are yourself or for your family members, encouraging them to find an area of the job market that is not dissolving, and I've written a lot about that, and we've had shows talking about the decline of jobs, but certainly this aspect specifically around technology is likely to burgeon. But because, as I said at the top of the show, many of the listeners of the show are not tech-centric, I wanted to focus on jobs that are nonetheless not going to get offshored or automated, but that are non-techie. There's no question that the need for social workers will continue to grow. And many listeners to this show and to KALW are that is consonant with their value system. So certainly a degree in social work. And unfortunately, in the old days, not so long ago, it used to be a bachelor's degree was enough to get a job in social work. Now a master's is required. The universities have done a, frankly, too good job of ratcheting up the requirements. They've worked with the professional associations and the governments to convince them that yet more school is required. So there will be more jobs for social workers. Law enforcement, alas and alack, whether it be cops or court administrators, I like to go under the radar, not just cops, but court administrators, parole officers, especially if you're bilingual, will be areas for growth. Accountants. Accounting, unfortunately, our tax laws are not getting simpler. They're getting more complicated. Of course, accountants are not just used for taxes, but very often they're the bean counters to help businesses and nonprofits run more efficiently. And so there is always a need for accountants. There's a specific need for forensic accountants, that is, people who are looking to find fraud, either within individuals who are working in companies or outside or for the government. Special education continues to grow. The law does mandate that no matter what cuts need to be made in regular education, special education dollars, because they are specifically mandated by both a phalanx of state and federal laws and very, very ardent advocates for special education, there is an seemingly endless increase in the number of special education teachers, school psychologists, even the school bus drivers who drive the very small buses to get special ed kids to schools and programs that they need. Construction is not growing, but there is a need for construction supervisors. The Bureau of Labor Statistics is talking about the fact there's plenty, there's a great oversupply these days, especially because a lot of people who are immigrants have a lot of those hands-on skills. But there is a need for supervisors of construction. So those are some areas of jobs that are growing. Before I have a lot more, especially jobs related to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it. And I want to talk about those, but I'd like to take this as a good time for me to invite you to call. Those are all general ideas about where jobs are, but they don't necessarily apply to you. And so if you are looking for a new career or someone you love is, and you would like some more individualized guidance on what you might want to pursue, we do what are called 3-minute workovers here on the show, where I ask you a bunch of questions and hopefully fairly quickly narrow you down to something that would feel both viable in the job market of tomorrow, but also consistent with who you are. The phone number for that 3-minute workover, this is the best time to call when all the lines are available. We don't want them to get full up, so you got to sit there on hold forever. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, as promised, The Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, will create more jobs. They will cut certain jobs, definitely, frankly, because the employer mandate is making employers, as been well documented, decreasing the number of people that they're willing to hire for more than 30 hours a week, because Obamacare's cost is thousands of dollars per person per year. But there will be an increase in the number of jobs, especially in the downscaled medical professions. For example, while there will probably be less work, a lot of the work that doctors are currently doing are going to be done by physician assistants, nurse practitioners, anesthesiology by nurse anesthetists or anesthesiology assistants. There'll be a need for, instead of physical therapists, physical therapy assistants or physical therapy aides. There'll be a need for cardiovascular technologists because a lot, you know, there is a lot of very invasive procedures which can often be avoided through, you know, echocardiograms and other kinds of tests that cardiovascular technologists can do. MRI techs, a lot of imaging is getting more and more advanced. So MRI techs. And of course, in medical IT, because we are going to be, after illegal immigrants are going to be made legal under Obama's very high priority of making them legal, they will then be covered under Obamacare, but they will be paying very little into the system. So one of the few things that are proposed as hopefully making the system not completely crush under the weight of all these millions of more people being covered is IT. So there will be tremendous jobs in medical records, in patient interface online, in getting digital answers created. But there will also be many people who mental health, because it's very clear that in Obamacare, mental health is covered to the same extent as physical health. And there is tremendous mental health needs. And so there will be jobs for mental health practitioners. There will be health jobs specially related to problems related to low-income people, trauma, obesity, cigarette smoking, alcoholism. So people who are specialists in those things, smoking cessation, dealing with obesity, trauma doctors, alcoholism specialists, there will be jobs in the healthcare space for that. Also, lab techs. There will be a great growth in the need for lab technicians, as those blood and urine tests cost a hell of a lot less to do than inpatient diagnoses like invasive angiograms and the like. So, you know, being a lab tech is going to be a field that will definitely grow. I'll stop there, I guess. Oh, yeah, I can't help but say, you know, there's no question that the field of medical doctors just can't keep up with the massive amount of information available. So there's going to be a tremendous amount of electronic diagnosis, computer-based diagnosis, to at least augment what doctors can do. People developing that, medical secretaries, medical billing people, insurance salespeople, as people get overwhelmed. I have previously talked on this show about medical advocates. The system is overwhelming and scary. And the government is even hiring some people to try to help people sign up for Obamacare. But there will also be people privately working with especially people who have horrible diseases like cancer to help them navigate what will be an absolutely overwhelmed system to try to get some measure of access. That is the ingredient that is never discussed, access. You know, the website's going to get solved. That's not going to be the problem. The problem is you've got the same number of doctors, nurses, MRI machines in hospitals, and you have 50 million more people being covered, most of whom are not going to be paying a lot into the system. Access is going to be the question. And some of these solutions that I've outlined will at least help address that issue, and that's where the jobs will be. All right. I'm not going to give out the phone number. Call the lines will light it up. Let's go right to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. How can I help?
You talking to me?
I am.
Okay. So I actually want to bring up positive politics. I read an article that you wrote on positive politics, and I do consulting, and I have a technical background, and I also have a journalism background, so I can write, and I can also do technical things.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I love consulting because I get to go into a lot of environments, meet a lot of people, but I would love to just find a home in a quickly growing startup where I can do a lot of different things. And my last engagement was just like that, and it just so happened that the seat that was available to me that day was, my first day was next to the kind of like the chief technology officer person. And I was working just as I usually do. And he was watching me, and he practically gave me a job offer like my first day.
Great.
But not so great. So what ended up happening is that the girl that had brought me in, he was her boss, and that really bothered her. So she immediately started to kind of put me down. And in any time that she could, like, put me down and kind of force, well, impose politics against me, she did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had this challenging project, very challenging deadlines. I was hitting all, you know, my deadlines. I'd figured out how to do it all. I was just rolling. And they took me out politically. I mean, the chief guy works, he comes in from where he lives, which is a different state, for like on again, off again, different weeks. And so it just so happened that he was there my first week, and then he was gone. And I only lasted 3.5 weeks because honestly, Marty, I think I'm threatening to people, not to the people that were not in my line of power. Everybody loves me, but if someone's in my line of power, because I'm very direct, and it has nothing to do, I'm a good person. Like, I like people. I try to help people. But I get into these problems where very quickly people get threatened by me. And it's not that, like, I'm some kind of, you know, wunderkind or something. I'm just a hard worker. So I'm trying to figure out how to work with positive politics so that I can get into a situation like this, do well. Oh, and my real problem, and I will just tell you this right now, is if somebody keeps, like, kind of attacking me, sometimes I will just kind of call them out.
Sure, you will, understandably. America is, I'm very fortunate. I do have a client, I've had clients all over the world. And America is distinctive, maybe among almost all other countries, in the primacy of not being, appearing too willful. The people who succeed, who are high quality, who nonetheless succeed and don't get slammed down by their inferiors, are very subtle about showing their work. They're very modest. There is this phony, it's all phony, it's a game. But if you at all appear too obviously to be superior, the inferior workers will sabotage you, and they will find ways to dig up dirt about you or make up dirt if it doesn't exist. So the people who are high performers, there's exceptions, but if you are very direct, and there is a danger that is setting you up to be destroyed by the lesser people, and they know what buttons to play. They will find something you either did dishonest or something that you did that implied that you were racist or sexist. They know the buttons to push, and they will use them. They will say you're not a team player, you're withholding. They make up all kinds of crap, or they magnify. They usually don't make it up. They usually magnify it. And so do you think that learning the almost uniquely American prerequisite to success, which is being understated, letting it only let others tout you, but being very subtle and modest and not trying to appear that you're better than anybody else. I hate it. I wish this was not the way things are. But that, in my experience, is the American way. Does that have any resonance as to what's going on and what you might do to ameliorate your situation?
Well, all I know is that I'm at the point where I am willing to learn. Like, when I was younger, I was just like, it just seemed wrong to me. And I just thought, I'm just going to work really, 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 really hard, and there's nothing anyone can do because they'll just be like, wow, she's so productive. But I'm going to get that book, that Daniel Goleman book on working with emotional intelligence, and just do whatever I have to do. I'm never going to confront someone. You know, I have to learn something, and I'm very willing to, I mean, it doesn't matter that I'm smart and can do all sorts of things.
Right.
Because I keep getting, basically, you know, if I keep getting stabbed in the back like this, then my life's going to be really challenging. And I'm willing to learn what I have to learn. But like you said, like, can you do it? And also, you're so funny saying it's the American thing. I'm completely American. I mean, I'm a third generation, like, Irish immigrant, really. There's nothing not American about me. Well, you know, in terms of being an immigrant. But
I should say the culture that is dominant in the American workplace. Rather, individuals, I think every individual likes to think they're direct, they can be evaluated on their merits. That's true, but collectively, when people are together, there is this implicit competition, and they're in. And I don't want to say it, but there has been many books written about this, that women in general hate it when another, and you mentioned that it was a woman who sabotaged you and the guy who liked you, that there has been many books about how women tend to knock down anybody who is seen as superior. This notion of being everybody equal, everybody the same. And I think it's particularly pervasive in the Bay Area, where egalitarianism is so central to its value system. So I think that notion of preserving people's self-esteem, making other people feel good about themselves, and only quietly through, you know, it being known by through your actions and others saying things about you that you're good, that's what works.
Yeah.
It's just...
You're right about the women. I will definitely say that. It usually is women. And really it is. That can... It just tends to be women. Like the men, it's not a problem at all. In fact, they usually show respect. They're like, wow, I can't believe you learned this quickly. And I usually say, tell your boss that, because, you know, this is a challenging environment for me.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always work. But nonetheless, I need to learn. Like, I need to learn. I could see the problem, and it might be unjust and everything.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's unjust. What matters is what can I learn, and how can I get smarter? Because if, you know, obviously I'm not that smart, because look what keeps happening, right?
That's all right, but I don't want to let you off without playing the other side. I don't want to turn you into a wimp who's merely not, you know, where you're just another obsequious person and hiding yourself. So, you know, if there is somebody, man or woman, who is your champion, it is appropriate to do things that aren't quite so positive politics, but not in a bad way. But going to say, I'm so frustrated. I appreciate so much that you praise. I did this, this, and this, but look what she did to me. Look what they did. They very clever what they do, and you don't have to say this is just you. You can show them there's so many books. You can show them the links to the Amazon where there are women who are bashing women all the time. And say, you know, look at what I'm doing. And ask for his or her advice. That might help you survive as well. Sometimes it is one person who's particularly odious, and that person, you know, you might at least in your toolkit, might want to use more power politics, which is to privately go to that person and say, look, I know exactly what you did. You withheld that key information from me. You falsely made up that I did this, or you magnified this, and you told, you know what, you do this crap again, and I am not going to take it. I'm not going to lose my career. I'm not going to lose my integrity because of you. I will document everything you've done and go to the boss. I'm not saying that's your first line of defense. That's what we might call the nuclear option, but it certainly is something that you should use as in your toolkit to balance the nicey-nicey approach. Does that make sense?
Well, but I'm a consultant, so I have no political...
Yeah, that's harder. But you still look, after one day you were taken from the ranks of just another temp to somebody who this boss was so impressed with. So, you know, yes, you have less power, but still they're scared. And even if somebody is an employee and you've got them chapter and verse as to what they're doing, they still don't want the boss to know. So... I want you to have both the positive politics and, as appropriate, the negative politics. It's like every political candidate knows that you try to do positive campaigning, talking about what you would do, etc. But if your candidate really sucks, it is ending up necessary sometimes to put down the candidate, the opponent. So keep both. It's like the yin and yang. It's a balanced thing. Okay. All our lines are lighted up, so thank you very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hello.
Hi.
Okay. Yeah. I'm wondering about the ageism thing. You just mentioned that construction supervisors are sought after,
mm-hmm.
and I've had like 40 years of construction,
mm-hmm.
and tried to retire, and then, you know, what happened. Everything went to hell, and... I got to get back. So I've been taking interviews, have a nice portfolio. I have a degree from Berkeley, I've been working a lot of construction all my life.
Yep.
Because I like to have, you know, the freedom that allows. I can pretty much come and go, at least until recently. But I'm not getting the jobs for one of two reasons. One, too old, and two, the funniest one was I was in San Francisco at a big engineering firm, and I had dressed appropriately because the guy that was interviewing me was dressed almost identically to me. We were in our like khaki, you know, leisure wear look, and getting along just fine until he asked me how much I wanted. And I was going to go low because I figured, well, they'll take me and I can work my way up. So I said, 45 an hour. And he looked at me and said, I don't have any confidence in anybody that would ask for that little. So, you know, he tried to offer me another job, but then when I said I'd do that, he just didn't come through. So I don't know what a guy 67 years old that can still lift, you know, his own weight overhead is going to do these days, because basically there's a lot of ageism out there.
I'm going to say that this. Yeah, I can't tell. Usually when people are on the radio, they're more energetic than they are in real life. But right now you sound tired. You don't sound enthusiastic. And so it may not it may not be your chronological age, but you were kind of very flat talking. You didn't sound enthusiastic. And nobody, you know, again, another of the quintessentially American things, and frankly, Europeans make fun of us, you know, is that we judge based on external enthusiasm a lot. And so one of the things I'd invite you to do is to try to show more enthusiasm, because especially when a guy is 67, they're going to see all those wrinkles and they're going to assume you're tired, you're burned out. And if you go in and you sound tired, it's going to reinforce that. The more positive side of that is you've got to preempt the concern. They can't say we're not hiring because you're too old. They'll get sued.
Right.
So you have to preempt the objection. You have to make the case for why your age is a plus. You have 40 or 30 years of knowledge of what works, what doesn't work with people, with wood, with metal, where you can save, where you can't, what's going to motivate. You need to preempt and say that your age is a strength, not a weakness. With regard to the money, normally the wisest response when they ask you how much do you want to make is not to give a number, because you are at such grave risk of losing either way, like you did. If you were too low, you're viewed as not feeling you're worth anything. If you're too high, they may say, we can't afford you. And so it's wisest to say, well, it depends on the nature of the position. What's the range you've budgeted for the position, and turn it back to them. Say, this is, you know, and if he refuses, say, look, this is not a Middle Eastern rug bargaining deal. You know, you've offered the job. I need to know what the salary range is. And they'll usually tell you it's a game. Who gets to give the first? And so you can't, you paid the price for giving the number. Does all that make sense?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
All right. I thank you for the call. I want to take as many as we can. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. What's your question for me? Hello, it's you. Hi, are you there? Let's go to next line. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Yes, my name is Marianne.
Hi, Marianne.
I've met you in the past. And first of all, I have to congratulate you, because that first caller that you had on the phone just sounds like me. I'm very direct. I'm a straight shooter.
Mm-hmm.
I was in teaching, and it doesn't really work having to work with all the assistants.
I didn't hear that. To work with what?
With the assistants, because I am such a straight shooter. I'm also almost totally blind, so I want to change my career to something I can do more on my own. And I'm wondering, number one, are there going to be jobs still in this country for collection agencies?
Oh, absolutely. And somebody who's blind, normally the stereotype is that you have a refined sense of hearing. And so working on much of that work is done by phone. to try to negotiate with people, whether it be, you know, excess, you know, credit card debt or mortgages or whatever. You have to really listen carefully to what is being said and how it's said, and their everything from their breathing rate to their change of pace of voice. Do you have a particularly refined sense of hearing?
Well, I just concentrate more on hearing.
Right.
But it's not something I have better than anybody else. But I also want to know, is medical transcription still a viable option?
I think there's still a lot of doctors who do, you know, who do still do dictation. I think so. Medical secretaries, medical billing, medical records. I think especially with Obamacare is going to grow. But there's something you said you were in teaching. Is that correct?
Yes, I was in teaching.
Right. Well, the more logical thing for somebody who's blind to teach is to be doing tutoring, maybe even tutoring to blind students, working at the California School for the Deaf, for the Blind, excuse me, getting referrals.
Do you have openings for this?
Now, I don't mean openings. I'm talking about, you know, when you sound like, you know, because you're retired, you're at retirement age, it's very hard to get hired by somebody. But it doesn't mean that a parent, for example, of a child who needs tutoring, especially if that person is blind, might welcome you being somebody who by phone could be doing tutoring with them. Does that make sense?
By the way, I'm not retirement age. I'm only 53.
Oh, I thought you said that you retired from teaching.
No, I just said that I used to be in teaching, but I want to change my career because it doesn't work for me anymore.
Okay. It's still, I must be honest, people who are over 50, and again, all I can hear is your voice, but your voice doesn't sound young.
It doesn't?
Nope.
What are you talking about?
Well, I must be crazy. What can I tell you? Anyway, so much of the screening occurs by phone. And it is not necessarily easy for somebody who's left teaching, who's blind, who's over 50 and doesn't sound like she's young, to land a job. So I'm inviting you to at least consider to accompany your efforts to land a job, whether it be in medical billing or in collections or whatever, to at least consider supplementing your income, possibly doing this tutoring of blind kids. In addition,
you know, I have been at that for the last 3 years, and a lot of the parents simply do not have money for this.
Okay, I'm going to push back one more time and be tough on you. Parents are spending $100 an hour for tutoring routinely, middle-class parents, if they like the tutor. But the excuse that anybody ever gives to a practitioner when they say that they don't want to hire you, they don't want to be direct and say, I think you're not good enough, you're not worth the money. I would invite you, and maybe you're not meant to be a tutor. That's very possible. But don't necessarily, if parents are saying that they don't have the money for you to tutor, after you've already been tutoring, you say you've been doing it for 3 years, that implies that maybe you need to either improve your tutoring skills or, yes, then maybe you weren't meant to be a tutor. Which do you think is more accurate?
I have been attempting to find people to tutor for the last 3 years.
Okay.
And I have my contact information in the California School for the Blind, in different tutoring agencies, mm-hmm. etc. But I seem not to be able to get the people I would need to really have my own business tutoring.
Couple of questions: Do you get to the interview stage where have you been interviewed for tutoring opportunities?
I had two tutoring jobs.
I didn't ask that. I said, have you gotten calls from a prospective from a parent who might want you to tutor or a school that might want you to tutor? Have you had interviews?
No.
Okay. Is it possible? I mean, when I think of how tutors get hired, it's in one of two ways. Number one, it's from personal referrals. So making, you know, actually making calls or appointments with people at, for example, schools for the blind. Maybe if you are somebody who's better at, let's say, math than in English, meeting with the math department people and talking with them is one possibility. The other is tutoring is occurring ever more online. And so there are websites where people sign, put their availability on tutoring websites. Many people are hiring their tutors based on those. Have you done that?
Yes, I have.
Okay. And so none of that has worked. There's something that's seeming odd here. I mean, I just remember reading an article called The Invasion of the Online Tutors. There are so many tutors that are available, that so many people want tutoring, that, you know, that they're even going around the world. That right now there are websites where they have these online tutors who tutor online with digital whiteboards and whatever. And they're even going to India and hiring tutors from India. So there's something missing here about the tutoring thing. Either we should, you know, you should forget about it because you're just not, you know, it's not the right thing for you. But there is no shortage of need for tutoring. Parents are so frustrated with the schools. They're so frustrated with their own kids' inability to meet the ever higher standards that are being required under, for example, the Common Core curriculum. There is no shortage. There is a tremendous demand for tutors. So I invite you to, as you evaluate, yes, there are plenty of jobs available in collections, unfortunately, in a tough economy. Employers are hiring people for collections, absolutely. But if I don't think that tutoring is dead, far from it. Anyway, I want to thank you for the call.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm talking about where the jobs are. I've talked about tech jobs, non-tech jobs, jobs created by the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Affordable Care Act / Obamacare. What I think I want to do now is I'm looking at the clock, and I said up front that there was so much I wanted to cover. So I want to switch gears. Maybe I should take one more. We've got a call who's been waiting a long time. I should be nice and take her or him. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
You are so nice.
I want to do my best, that's for sure.
I'm a Hoseon in San Francisco, and I want to give a tip to the last caller.
Great.
That if she's into medical transcribing as a blind person, mm-hmm. to go to Odesk.
Yes.
Odesk.
Odesk is a...
I have a blind friend. I'm partially blind myself.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I want to thank the caller, two or three calls ago, a woman who talked about being attacked and set up on the jobs over and over again, particularly by women,
right.
blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And it's very old school. Stabbing your sisters in the back
right.
is counterproductive, blah, blah. And I'm 64, and I had to get through a career that was male-dominated, jazz, when women were not playing saxophones and doing what they wanted. And it was a terrifically tough time. And then I went through a female-dominated thing. 500 women passed through our doors, and I lasted because I was always schematic about it. So the thing that I sort of automatically changed gears into was bolstering the people I work with. So-and-so at the head of the board of so-and-so just loves you because of the way you present yourself. And I'll do it in front of people at a board meeting.
That's the American way. That is it. Bolstering other people, preserving their self-esteem, building their self-esteem
exactly.
is key to success. I'm not sure it's ultimately, you know, in an ideal world, it would be more about the merits. But yes, pumping other people. There were studies.
I do it honestly.
Yep.
I do it honestly. I do it because I admire how they got
Good.
Through this situation and so on and so forth. And it's just easier than taking the heat all the time.
That works. Also, I want to add to your Odesk. Odesk is merely one of a number of websites that offer those kind of opportunities for temp,
right.
whether it be tutoring. There's you know, there's TaskRabbit and there's Elance and Guru, and there's specific websites for tutors, and I can't remember their names, but Google tutoring websites, and they are there, tons of them. So yes.
Yeah, I would ask her to call the San Francisco Library for the Blind. I sit on the advisory board for that library.
Great.
And ask for Elizabeth, because Elizabeth is fast as a jackrabbit on the computer, and see if she can come up with any leads, because the lady has energy to work. She's truly frustrated, and I understand it.
Yep.
And otherwise, thank that other first caller, because she told my life story. Yeah. And I'm 64.
Yeah, there is a lot of women, sisters killing sisters instead of sisters abetting sisters. Yeah.
It's nowhere. And if a sister continues to do that, I will not give her my energy or my business ever again.
Yeah, I understand. You know,
two strikes and you're out.
Yeah.
You know?
Anyway, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
You know, I always like to provide the balance. While on the one hand, yes, the Odesks and the Elances and the Gurus of the world are very helpful to landing a job, but actually, in many ways, they're devastating. It's a race to the bottom, because there are so many people putting themselves out there, putting their willingness to work online, that what ends up happening is, I know I used 99 designs to design my last book, two book covers, and it's who's willing to work for the cheapest. And it's very, you know, and you are, Americans are certainly competing with people in everywhere from Azerbaijan to Zambia. And in India, for example, you have really some very quality people willing to work for $5 an hour and to $5 to $10 an hour. And, you know, I do believe that American salaries are going to get driven down to the world average, which is about $18,000 a year. And so we need to look at both the advantages and disadvantages of all of these employee websites. Okay, now, as promised, I'm going to implicit in so much of what we've been talking about so far is how employable are you? And I try to represent the balance between, you know, optimism where I can justify it and being tough where I need to be. But how employable are you? For U.S. News, I created this little quiz with, let's see, it's got 12 questions to help you assess how employable are you. And more importantly, your answers may give you an idea of where you need to maybe improve. You know, because remember, there some job searchers land a good job very fast. I have clients who land a job in a week, and then they stay hired forever, while there are others who never find a job and never, or at least don't keep decent employment, and they're back on the streets looking again. So to get a sense of your employability and to discover what you might do to enhance it, I want you to rate yourself on these questions on a scale from 0 to 10. And if you're not looking for a job, maybe some of your romantic partner or your child or whatever is. So here we go. Question number one, it's rating your skills and ability. And this is I'm giving you a 10-point answer and a 0-point answer. And you rate yourself from 0 to 10. The first one relates to your skills and abilities. 10 points is that your skills and ability to do your target job are top-notch, and 0 would mean you lack much of what it takes to do your target job well. So rate yourself or that person who is a potential job seeker on that scale from 0 to 10. Second question relates to the rarity of the skills required in your target job. 10 points would be that few people have the skills to do your target job, for example, mastery of computer assembly language. A 0-point answer would be that your target job requires only widely held soft skills, organizational skills, being detail-oriented, having a pleasant personality. So rate yourself from 0 to 10 on the rarity of the skills required for your target job. Third question, third factor in terms of assessing your employability. That is, how is your drive? A 10-point score would be you accomplish more than do most people. You show considerable initiative, and you rarely procrastinate. A 0-point score would be you do the least you can get away with, you show little initiative, and you often procrastinate. So score yourself or someone you love on the question of drive. Fourth item in the how employable are you self-assessment is your emotional intelligence. That's been a lot of what we've talked about today on the show. A 10-point answer is you have a knack for getting people to work well with you and you're well-liked. That's a 10-point answer. Zero is you're often befuddled as to why many people are often unsupportive of you or angry with you. Okay, that's the emotional intelligence item. The fifth item relates to your emotional well-being. A 10-point answer is you're usually at ease, usually able, without a lot of assistance, to roll with the ups and downs that just are endemic to what life is and what work is. That's a 10-point answer. A 0-point answer is that you're widely perceived as high maintenance, and you're often unhappy, angry, and you need a lot of emotional support. So score yourself 0 to 10 on that emotional well-being item. Number 6, the sixth factor in how employable are you, is your thinking and learning ability. A 10-point answer would be you're an unusually fast learner, and you reason rigorously. And sometimes if you don't really know that, sometimes it's useful to think about what your score is on tests of reasoning ability, such as the SAT. If you scored over the 90th percentile, that's probably it's a reasonable indicator of a 10-point answer. A 0-point answer on rating your thinking and learning ability would be you learn slowly and you're poor at complex reasoning. And again, if you're not sure, if you scored below, say, the 25th percentile in most standardized tests like the SAT, that would be consistent with a 0 answer. So rate yourself and your thinking and learning ability from 0 to 10. The seventh item on the how employable are you quiz is your ethics. A 10-point answer would be you always prioritize ethics over expediency, even when you pay a price for doing that. A 0-point answer is you always prioritize expediency over ethics. Okay, so rate yourself from 0 to 10 on ethics. Or again, it could be somebody, if you're not looking for a job or whatever, you might rate somebody else who you do know who cares about, who's involved in looking for a job or has been frequently losing jobs. The eighth item on the how employable are you questionnaire is your level of education. We do value degrees. So compared with other applicants, this is a 10-point answer. Compared with other applicants for your target job, specifically for your target job, you have an education that would be top of the pile, top of the stack. A 0-point answer related to your level of education is compared with other applicants for your target job, you have a less on target and poorer quality education. So now score yourself on your level of education. Number 9 out of 12 questions in the How Employable Are You quiz is your job interviewing skill. A 10-point answer would be you nearly always win people over, especially in cognitively demanding, emotionally stressful situations. And one way to assess this, of course, is, what's been your success rate in previous job interviews? That's a 10-point answer. 0 is you make a poor impression when meeting people and in demonstrating that you'd be an excellent person to hire. So now rate yourself on job interview skills. The 10th question in the How Employable Are You quiz is related to your employment history. A 10-point answer would be that your target job is the logical next step in an employment history that shows a progressive increase in responsibility. A 0-point answer would be that you have significant employment gaps. You've job hopped and you have little experience related to your target job. So score yourself or the person you care about on their employment history 0 to 10. The 11th item on the How Employable Are You quiz is your references. A 10-point answer would be your recommenders are highly credible and tout you as very qualified, and you've got personality characteristics that make you a most desirable employee. A 0-point answer would be that your references are weak or not credible. Probably both. So score yourself from 0 to 10 on your references, how good they are. And the final item, the 12th item on the How Employable Are You quiz is your drive to job search. There are many people who can be driven on the job, but they just hate job search so much they procrastinate. So a 10-point answer would be that every week for months, if necessary, you will have a large number of high-quality interactions with people in your network, coffees, phone calls, whatever, that you're contacting prospective employers who are not advertising an on-target job because, a lot of jobs are filled without ads being placed. And, you're also, at least in each week, answering at least a few on-target ads. I'll repeat that again because it's kind of complicated. So a 10-point answer would be that every week, for months if necessary, You'll have a number of high-quality interactions with people in your network. You'll contact prospective employers who aren't advertising an on-target job. And you're answering at least a few on-target ads. That's a 10-point answer. A zero-point answer would be you're burned out and you would consider it a productive week if you answered just one ad and made one networking call. Rate yourself from 0 to 10 on that. Now, think about your answers to these questions. Most people get overwhelmed if you have more than one to-do, one takeaway from this. But is there one thing that you or someone you care about should do differently to maximize your likelihood of landing a job? And that is the How Employable Are You quiz. So now I'd like to give out the phone number again. If you would like some help with your career, I will give out the phone number one more time. If you want a 3-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And the final thing I promised at the top of the show that I would address is this. There has been a major nationwide effort to try to unionize and or at least raise the worker pay to a living wage, to $15 an hour is the number most often given for fast food workers. Is that a wise idea? I always like to focus on the advantages and disadvantages and leave to you the decision as to which is wiser. So let me try to make the pros and cons as well as I can about this important issue. And if we have time, maybe take a call or two. The people who work in the front lines at fast food restaurants work harder and more odiously, if you will, than the billionaires who own the companies or even the shareholders. And yet they live in squalor. You can't live on $10 an hour. You know, there you are working at, you know, hot spattering, you know, oils and dealing with grumpy customers in a fairly repetitive job. And you're paid an amount that you can't even live in a decent apartment or health care or whatever. While there are, you know, the executives are making millions. And forget about the top executives. Even the middle managers are making $100,000 and they're sitting in nice offices. That's the pro argument. The con argument for that is, well, you know, those middle managers and executives, they did a lot to get there. You know, you can get a job as a high school dropout flipping burgers, but the people who were successful, they delayed gratification. They stuck out their hard courses in high school and college and usually and often graduate school. They are doing cognitively demanding work that isn't something that everybody can't do. And they're adding enough value there to the company that they couldn't be replaced. They're you know, coming up with smarter procedures for training folks, for developing products that are healthier and more consistent with people's even fast food. There's, if you look at the fast food menus of today versus 50 years ago, they're a lot healthier than they were. So. But of course, on the other hand, some of people's success is luck. If somebody became an executive at McDonald's, you know, they were either born smarter, to parents who provided good role models or who got them into good schools, you know. And so an argument could say that public policy, to say requiring employers to pay $15 an hour to every worker, including the fast food person, should try to compensate for people who lost in what has been called the genetic lottery. They had the misfortune of being born to parents who weren't wealthy, who weren't efficacious, or where there's gunshots being fired in, you know, in your neighborhood. So those are the pros and cons about that issue, that argument for raising fast food workers. But there are other arguments. Corporate profits are high is an argument. Say, you know what? McDonald's can afford it. And, you know, far greater that the money go into the pockets of poor people than shareholders or executives. And that's a legitimate argument. There is a counter to that argument as well, that most fast food restaurants, including most McDonald's franchises and Burger King franchises, and all of Subway's are not owned by the corporation. They're independently owned. And I've spoken, for example, to owners of Subway's, and they're struggling. Because they got to pay, you know, they're surviving on very small margins. They got to pay a lot of franchise fees. So if they were forced to pay all their workers $15 an hour, You know, are we really not necessarily taken away from the fat cats? And yet those people have worked their guts out to be able to save up the money to afford a franchise. They're barely, often just marginally middle class folks. Not everybody. Some of the McDonald's franchisees, because it costs a fortune to buy a McDonald's franchise. They are rich, but a lot of them are not. And then it comes down to the fundamental question about egalitarianism versus meritocracy. You know, all people, by virtue of being human, are entitled to some measure of quality of life. But the question is, how much redistribution? You know, is this person who's, say, owning a Subway franchise, who's making, say, $70,000 a year or $100,000 a year, but has perhaps worked hard to save the money to open that and is, you know, can't go home at 5 o'clock, who's thinking and worrying about the business constantly, you know, and has that, you know, is that person, does that person deserve to make that money, or should he or she be forced to redistribute his income to make sure that all the workers, instead of making 10 bucks an hour, are making at least 15 plus benefits? It's an open question. It really does come to that core question of egalitarianism versus some, at least one definition of meritocracy. Here's another argument in favor of raising their wages. That right now, the taxpayer is subsidizing fast food workers. Shouldn't the fast food restaurants be, for example, you know, what I mean by subsidizing is they're paying under Obamacare, for example, the taxpayer is going to subsidize fast food workers' health care. And shouldn't it be the fast food restaurants who are subsidizing their workers' health care rather than the taxpayer? On the other hand, is it really right that people who, because of their, you know, lack of education, they've chosen to not, they're not that hardworking, they haven't delayed gratification, gotten a bachelor's or a master's degree, and they don't have a lot of skills? Should they really be, should all the responsibility for their health care, for their transportation subsidies, for their housing subsidies, for their food stamps or whatever, should that responsibility for them be transferred all to the employer or to the taxpayer? Or how much should reside in the individual worker for the choices that he or she made? I mean, if he or she, for example, dropped out of high school, joined a gang, got pregnant, had three kids, and now needs money and works at McDonald's, how much of that is the employer's responsibility to pay them more than their fair market wage? How much is it as the taxpayer's responsibility? It's an open-ended question, right? One more, there's so much, but one more example and then we're out of time. If we raise the wages of fast food workers to $15, what's going to happen is, of course, the owners of the fast food restaurants are going to raise the prices. The estimates are going to be about 25%. So that's actually it's a bad thing because poor people end up buying fast food, but it's also a good thing because if we raise the price of fast food, maybe it would make more people want to eat healthier. So it's a complicated, complicated issue. One more thing, I have to. If we raise the wages to $15 an hour, it's going to speed automation. Right now in Amsterdam, there's a chain of fast food restaurants called Fibo that is using automated robots to serve, prepare the food and serve the food. Japanese from fast food places are doing it, so it may be bad for the fast food workers in the same way as the invention of the car was bad for the buggy whip makers. Is it going to accelerate their being unemployed? So you see how complicated these issues. We cannot just rely on the soundbite that says raise workers' salaries. It's a complicated mixed bag, and I'm agnostic, and I'm wondering if this may help you be a little more nuanced in the whole, you know, in deciding how you should decide, what you should think. In any case, that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do more 3-minute workovers on calls. And you know, I devoted part of today's show to where the jobs are, where what's hot, what's under the radar, what's simply rewarding, but I only scratched the surface. I got a ton. So I'm going to share some more next week. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.